And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, Senator Charles Grassley is scheduled to join us live. You may join us with your question on our Facebook page now for Senator Grassley on the program tomorrow. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. For the remainder of this hour, we want to talk about stalking, harassment, domestic abuse. This conversation prompted by two recent cases here in Iowa that resulted in the deaths of two young women. Joining us to talk about them, Alan Heisterkamp, director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at the Center for Violence Prevention at the University of Northern Iowa, in our Cedar Falls studio. Alan Heisterkamp, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
Tara Beck is with you as well in the Cedar Falls studio, Waypoint Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Director. Hello, Tara.
Hi, Ben.
Let's go through these cases here. Painful to read about these, hear about these in our news. Most recently, the case on June 12th in Coralville, the Coral Ridge Mall employee, a 20-year-old Andrea Farrington, gunned down, arrested later that day and charged with first-degree murder for that killing amid hundreds of shoppers. 22-year-old Alexander Kozak of North Liberty, who'd been a mall security officer. The slain woman had reportedly told a cousin that this man, Kozak, had engaged in disturbing behavior toward her for at least the past 6 weeks, staring at her while she was working and leaving notes on her car. Let me just get both of your perspectives on violence, this type of tragedy. Tara Beck.
Sure. I do just want to clarify that Waypoint is a domestic violence comprehensive program.
Mm-hmm.
We used to provide sexual assault services, but that currently is Riverview Center in the Black Hawk County area. So just that clarification.
Sure.
I think, unfortunately, interpersonal violence is all too common in Iowa and nationally. If you look at some statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you look at 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men experiencing physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. From the Stalking Resource Center, approximately 1 in 6 women and 1 in 19 men experiencing stalking in their lifetime, as you heard in that Coralville case. I think the prevalence is out there, and unfortunately, a lot of community members think that that it won't happen to them.
Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, and we do want to stress here, the investigations in both of these cases are ongoing. So these are alleged perpetrators in I guess both cases. But in a lot of cases, do you think, Tara Beck, that someone put in the position of being harassed, domestic abuse, they just hope it will go away if they don't take any action?
I think there's a lot of reasons why victims don't take action. Some of those include, fear of ongoing or increased harm. Certainly, we know that the most dangerous time for victims of domestic violence is when they attempt to separate or leave a violent partner. And then in particular, in case of domestic violence, you have other needs, for example, hoping that things will change. Logistical needs like housing, transportation, childcare needs that might be linked with that partner. And I think for some victims, there's the societal or faith values related to sanctity of committed relationships. And all of those, I think, help contribute to why victims don't seek help.
Mm-hmm. Alan Heisterkamp, how much can you tell us about what we know about the mindset of a suspect like this?
Well, Ben, unfortunately, the actions that were played out by the young man are not uncommon. I would echo what Tara said, is that these behaviors are somewhat predictable when there are shootings, particularly against women and girls. The perpetrator is most oftentimes a young man or a male perpetrator. And so what we know and understand with regards to oftentimes the socialization of young men and young boys growing up, particularly as they're navigating in and out of relationships, is that, certain men and boys have a very hard time facing rejection or being told no or not having their feelings reciprocated. And when you lack the skills and education as to how to navigate through those situations, you oftentimes refer to some of the lowest hanging fruit, and that is acting in a violent or an abusive, or in this case, in a stalking manner. certainly having access to weapons is one piece to the situation there, but following through and thinking about his choices that if I can't have you, nobody can have you, is something that should concern all of us.
Mm-hmm. Here's another case where that last phrase you used, if I can't have you, nobody will have you, is apparently at work. This in a case reported by the Des Moines Register on February 16th, Mevlita Dadnanovic told an Urbandale detective that she didn't want to press charges against her boyfriend, who is a former Des Moines police officer, or was a former police officer in Des Moines, because she feared for her life. 2 months later, this 24-year-old woman was found strangled in the back of an SUV that she and this boyfriend, the former Des Moines police officer, Mirzet Dotovic, had taken to a concert in Chicago on April 17th. And then just a few feet away, the body of Dotovanic, 32 years old, was found hanging from a rope in his apartment garage in Urbandale. So this is going back. Let's hear a little bit of the recorded interview that the woman did here with the Urbandale detective, David Cook, from back in February. Goes exactly to what you were saying, Tara Beck, about fearing taking action here. Let's listen to the detective's voice first of all.
Why don't you think the process would work if we arrested him and got the no contact order?
Because you don't understand. You don't understand things that happened before. You don't understand when I tried to do something before, when my family wanted to do something about it before. You don't understand what Merced was ready to do. You don't understand that. You just don't understand.
Are you worried about testifying against him? Is that what the worry is?
I'm scared. Yes, I'm scared to do anything. I'm scared if I do press charges against him and he goes to prison or he goes to jail. I'm afraid. Even when he comes out, even while he's there, I'm afraid for me and my kids that he's gonna have somebody come after me for that. And I can't do that. I just can't, because I know he will. He's not gonna just rest for that. So the only thing that I'm gonna do is I'm gonna just go and get myself a new phone number and spend every time that I have with my family, because he can't come there. He can't do anything there.
Okay. 2 months later, the woman whose voice you just heard, she was found strangled in the back of an SUV. Tara, this is exactly a problem that many victims of domestic abuse face, right?
That's correct. And I think, unfortunately, what you hear her talking about there is an ongoing pattern of violence and coercive control behaviors that don't stop just because the victim asks for them to stop, or even because of criminal legal sanctions. That mentality of the abusive partner is one of entitlement to do harm at any cost, unfortunately.
Hmm. How can we do better in preventing such violence? A matter of law or raising awareness? Alan, where do you think the fastest improvement can be found?
Well, Ben, I'm not sure it's fast, but it certainly needs to be comprehensive and systemic in nature. If you look at the entire spectrum of what needs to take place in prevention, it has to work simultaneously with regard to legislation, education, and actual skills and protocol and procedures to be aware of. For example, we go to great pains to have our young kids go through or be certified and skilled in applying CPR and the Heimlich maneuver when they take health classes in middle school and high school. But yet we don't talk about or teach them in a comprehensive way what an unhealthy relationship looks like and sounds like. And more importantly, what you can do if you see or observe a behavior that is potentially hurtful or harmful, or that could lead to the potential harm of another student, a classmate, a friend. And we don't do that. Yet our kids and society, they see this happening every single day. So education is, and the prevention is a key piece, but it has to be supported by the broader community the policies and the protocols that go with that. I would echo what Tara said, is that a restraining order or one night or two nights in jail does not for men in this position, because of that obsession and that jealousy and that desire for control and entitlement, these victims are terrorized you know, and fear for the lives of themselves and their children and their families, because society has demonstrated that we're not wanting to hold perpetrators accountable. Some states have, tested some policies and practices with regards to monitoring electronically alleged perpetrators, and they've seen some positive results. But we don't want to, as a society yet, hold perpetrators accountable.
Kathy Niebel is with us as well, joining us by phone. Kathy's been on this program before, back in 2013, I believe. She works at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
You are a stalking victim and now a stalking victim's advocate. You have been stalked by your ex-husband for 30 years. We spoke to you in May of 2013. Does that continue?
I'm happy to say that the activity has ceased pretty much. However, I still am very aware and cautious in the way I move about my life and my children, because I've been told by many experts that until he's dead, I'm really not safe. So even though I haven't had any interaction or contact from him in almost 2 years now, I guess I can't say that I've let my guard down or feel like it's over. I've declared it over, but time will tell.
Kathy, you've certainly heard about the two cases we've mentioned, we've gone through here in the first part of this conversation. Your reaction to that? Are laws failing us, women mostly, though men can be, of course, victims of domestic abuse?
Well, I feel that, as your other guests have said, that it's really more than just one part of this as far as laws or community action. For me, the laws in court failed miserably when there were times in the early years that they could have held him accountable and possibly helped him understand that there would be consequences for his actions. That was not done. So 30 years has gone by now, and he still believes that he can do pretty much anything he wants because there's no one that's going to hold him accountable. I also think, though, that law enforcement has failed, although I think they've made huge improvements. And I also think just society in general, people tend to dismiss when you say, I'm really fearful or I'm afraid that something's going to happen. We need to really listen to the victims. And even if you don't see it as being serious, they do. And to support them and help them in any way we can. My heart breaks for these two women and their family members. Every time I hear of another death due to domestic violence or stalking, my heart just breaks, and it motivates me more to just, we need to educate everyone and help them understand that this is a society problem. It doesn't stay in the four walls of a home. And I think when we know better, we'll do better. And I love that we're having this conversation this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Governor Branstad earlier this year launched initiatives to crack down on domestic abusers and better protect victims against the threat of violence, stalking, mm-hmm. or harassment. Kathy, I don't know if you know the specific points of that proposed legislation. Do you know what it is? And can you tell, is that a step in the right direction?
I think it's a step in the right direction. The problem we've had when we discussed this out at the Law Enforcement Academy is the fact that it's just not cut and dry enough. Who's going to interpret that if you've had one date, it's a relationship, or if you've been on five dates, does that become a relationship? So I know there's a lot of confusion among lawmakers and the public in general, and I think that's something that's very difficult to define. When it is a relationship, is it an intimate relationship? When it's more of a dating situation, like the lady in Urbandale, they weren't married. So I think it's something that we need to continue to pursue. I think it's something that needs more discussion. I do think the Senate made a move to try to help with this law, but it needs more work. And I'm hoping as the discussions continue and people get involved in these issues, we can find a way to write a law that will be more effective. However, with that being said, I also have to say, I know for my own case personally, there's not a law in the books that will stop him, and there's not a law in the books that really helped me to feel totally safe. A lot of it, I've had to just find ways, be my own best advocate to stay safe, demand assistance and demand attention from the police departments. So I think we have a lot of work ahead, but I have seen improvements over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Tara Beck, what do you think about the governor's proposals here, his initiatives there? I guess some of the points there, asking to triple the mandatory minimum sentence for a person with a third domestic abuse assault from 1 to 3 years. Offenders with a third conviction for stalking harassment would be required to serve at least 85% of their sentence. Other points there? I'm sure you've looked at that proposed legislation.
Sure. And I do think that there are lots of public policy solutions that need to come about. And I also do want to highlight what the woman who called in was saying, that over the past 30 years or so, there have been several successes. And I want to highlight, out of this past legislative session, one of the big successes for victim services was maintaining funding levels for victim services across the state. And that includes level funding for prevention education activities that were mentioned earlier. There was the Safe at Home Act was passed that allows domestic violence and sexual assault victims to apply for confidential address. And I think that was an important win also. I think classifying assaults that occur in the context of dating violence as sexual abuse crimes would be very beneficial for the protection of domestic abuse victims, as well as the creation of civil protective orders for those that are in dating violence relationships.
Alan, let's talk about another level of remedy here. When you witness something in public, as a bystander, how do you know when to intervene? Or perhaps you're a friend of this a couple and you see some worrying things going on.
Well, that's the challenging part, is to what do I do or say in situations like you just described, Ben? And the reality is that if we start at the youngest age as possible in our schools and reinforce through community partners and allies with regards to being that active, you know, pro-social bystander or friend, that you are given opportunities to discuss and practice and rehearse what you would do, just like we would teach a skill or a strategy in an academic subject, that we have these conversations, that we take them seriously, because if it becomes a part of how we operate, as to how I navigate in my teen relationships or in my social circles, if that is what a caring person is expected to do and is supported socially to do those things, then it's not such a big leap or as intimidating or as challenging to do so. But it has to be a part of our education and reinforced both in the community and the broader society. We know the strategies and the skills that are lacking that could have an incredible impact on preventing situations like these from escalating and ending up in a murder suicide.
So, Alan, you're saying we're waiting until too late, until college, to get into this when we should be starting with the elementary school?
Absolutely. We oftentimes dismiss aggressive behaviors, particularly in young boys, at play or in the social peers, by, you know, writing it off as, well, he just likes you, or he's just teasing you, or boys will be boys. And I mean, the cliche is really running out of steam. But you know, we have to acknowledge the fact that we socialize young men, particularly, to not take no for an answer, to be in control. Right. And when your authority is questioned, you need to take steps to fix it.
Right. And we see this, Tara Beck, I'm sure you see this in Hollywood films, all kinds of TV shows and films that show actually the heroic man that doesn't give up, being crafty and getting a woman's attention and finally having her pay attention to him and, as Hollywood would have it, fall in love with him.
Absolutely. And I think those strict gender roles or gender stereotypes really do both men and women, boys and girls, a disservice. That hyper-masculinity and macho type of display that is rewarded or promoted for young men, and that passive or accommodating type of stance that's highlighted as, you know, the way to be for young women, I think that does both men and women a disservice and definitely contributes to a culture that promotes and condones violence in general and violence against women and girls in particular.
Let's end. We have a couple minutes here, but if someone is listening now who has a relationship that they are questioning because of harassment or domestic abuse. Tara, what do they do?
I would want people to know that victim services for both domestic and sexual assault are present across the entire state. They're free and confidential. They can be accessed through two hotlines. I can give those numbers now, or we could...
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So the statewide domestic violence hotline is 1-800-942-0333. And the sexual abuse hotline for the state is 1-800-824-7821. And those phone lines can link people to their local victim service provider.
So you don't have to worry. It's confidential. You can call up, and even if you're not knowing whether it's a case that should be reported, you can share your story, and we'll be given guidance anonymously.
Absolutely.
Tara. Kathy Niebel, anything to add to that before we have to go?
No, I just think everything that's been said today is so vital, and I couldn't agree with Alan more as far as the training and education. The only thing I would add is if any woman listening is feeling uncomfortable, scared of some behavior, it never hurts to just call your local authorities either, and if you can. And if nothing else, tell them to just make a report. You know, if you're feeling that way, act on it. I always say try to be proactive without putting yourself at risk.
Okay, thank you very much. Kathy Niebel, working at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, a stalking victim and a stalking victim's advocate. Tara Beck with us, the director at the Waypoint Center in Cedar Rapids. Alan Heisterkamp, director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at the Center for Violence Prevention at the University of Northern Iowa. Tara, Alan, and Kathy, thanks for joining us this half hour.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Ben.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. We had help today from Tony Daner in Cedar Falls. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, as I mentioned. Charles Grassley, our senator here in Iowa, will be my guest for a half hour on tomorrow's program. Hope you'll join us for that. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.